Welcome to another episode of Tackling the Opioid Epidemic with the Prescription Playbook, where we have conversations about empowering and educating our communities to prevent overdose and help end the opioid crisis. My name is Erica, and I'm a prevention specialist with the Prescription Playbook, and I'm joined by my co-host.
Hey, everyone. Today, I have the pleasure of co-hosting this episode with Erica. My name is Leah, and I'm also a prevention specialist on our team. And today we are very excited to welcome our guest, Isaiah Izzy Carrington. Izzy is on a mission to help students discover what it really means to grow up by living their unapologetic passions. From a shy high schooler to an inspiring speaker and coach, Izzy blends humor, heartfelt stories, and practical takeaways to empower middle and high school students to pursue their passions boldly. Today, Izzy holds a master's degree in communication studies from Southern Illinois University. He also teaches public speaking at Harper College and is a nationally ranked powerlifter. Now he's back on stage pursuing his dreams, speaking to students and telling them what he once needed to hear when he was in their seat. We're incredibly excited to have this opportunity to learn more about him and all the incredible ways that he pours into local communities across the state of Illinois.
Hey, how we doing, everyone?
Izzy, why don't you go ahead and start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yes. So I grew up in the Northwest suburbs. I grew up playing sports. I tried just about every sport that I could. I tried 9 different sports growing up. Football was always my favorite. I am a diehard Bears fan. I like to joke that I'm Caleb Williams' twin. So if the Madden curse is real and they need a backup, I'm just saying I can't throw like him. I might be a Dollar General version, but we got to look alike. Okay. So I grew up playing sports. But then when I got to high school, I actually was really, really shy. And I was actually like bullied a little bit and kind of a loner. So I actually pretty much quit sports throughout all of high school. I joined football freshman year of high school. And in practice, I was taking blindside shots from teammates. Coaches just weren't like protecting me or taking care of me. And then as I was going into my sophomore year on the football team, one of the football coaches, who was also my English teacher at the time, pulls me aside after class and is like, "You're too weak to play on my football team." And I was like, "Okay, can I get some help with that?" Or so I went to the weight room one time and tried to, like, you know, get stronger. And then he comes to me after a set and then tells me, "You're not doing enough weight and you're still not doing that weight right." I was like, well, I can't fix both of those things at the same time. So, like, which one do you want? I can go all the way down, or I can put some 45s on here and not be able to get it up. Like, I was also only benching like 10s at the time. So, like, help, my guy. I'm just starting.
You got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And so I actually didn't get really started on my fitness journey until I was 20. I was going into my sophomore year of college, actually, when I really got started into fitness. And when I first got started, I actually wanted to be a bodybuilder. But then diets are hard, and I was not going to be stuck eating chicken and rice all day. And also 45 minutes on the Stairmaster? No, absolutely not. So I eventually switched over to powerlifting. And actually, like, kind of did it on a whim and just happened to find out that I was kind of strong, and then made it my whole personality ever since. So outside of teaching and being a speaker, I also spend a lot of time in the gym as a powerlifter. I also am an MC for a lot of powerlifting meets. So I try to give back to that community as well, stay active in the gym and just helping people along their fitness journey, and then helping people along, you know, as a student leader, really just any way that I can. I kind of have always viewed myself as kind of a Renaissance man of, like, I know a little bit about a lot of different things, and I'm willing to share all of that with whoever's willing to hear.
That's great. I think, you know, talking and adding to that piece about trying to share as much as you can and that knowledge that you have, I think that really speaks to the public speaking that you do. And you're telling us a little bit about you know, your experience in high school and then in college. Did you come into public speaking after high school being that you were shy, or was that something you always had your eye on? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so in somewhere around like middle school and early high school, I really, really like pulled away from people. I kind of was just like really to myself. Like I said, I was getting bullied on the football team. And so when I did pull away from football, because I had put a lot of my identity into football, I really didn't know who I was. Like, it was such a passion for me. Like, before then, you could not tell me that I wasn't going to play for the Bears. Like, I had my stats mapped out and everything, like whole career path ready. And then it was a very hard reality realizing that a 5'2", 130-pound kid was probably not going to make it to the NFL. So then after that, I was shy. I didn't really know what to do with myself. And so one day out of nowhere, a friend invited me to an event called Operation Snowball, which is an organization that does youth leadership and prevention in high schools as well. And I saw a speaker on stage for the first time. And I was like, that's so cool. Like, you can just make a career just telling stories and jokes on stage and inspiring people. And I was like, that is the most opposite of a person as I am right now. Let me try to be that. So it really was almost like a challenge that I set to myself of like, do public speaking. And at the time I was like, I really have zero experience with this, have no clue like how to become a motivational speaker. And so I started forcing myself to like join activities and clubs that would force me to public speak. So my senior year of high school, I joined my high school speech team. And on that high school speech team, every tournament that you go to, you give 3 speeches and then they rank you like 1 through 6 at the time. 1 being the best, 6 being the worst based on like how much that person liked your speech in that round. I took 6th in every single round of every single tournament that I performed in my senior year. It was truly just like round after round of me just being the worst speaker in the round. And it really didn't really affect me because I went into it knowing like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing with this. And so I just looked at it as an opportunity to grow and to continue to work on skills that I was developing, and eventually it worked out. 15 years later, here I am. But yeah, it really took me putting myself in really uncomfortable positions. I gave a lot of bad speeches on my way to this point, and it just was something that I had to just keep sticking through.
So I also, like, being an athlete is still a big part of my life. And I unfortunately also have had experiences where coaches just have not been supportive of like your growth and your needs, and helping you in the areas that like you both know that you need it in. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to what kind of like mentally and emotionally you went through in like getting that not helpful feedback from your coach, from kind of stepping away from football. And I'm wondering if there were any teachers or professors that really helped you to feel confident in your talking and your communication, and that really were able to help your growth.
Yeah. So in that moment, I was just like, I was really like broken for a moment. Cause like, for me in my head, like teachers are supposed to be like the nice ones, right? And like, it was like right after class. So in my brain, he was still like in teacher mode. So for me, it was more like my teacher saying you're not good enough than like my football coach too. So it was kind of like double layered in a way of like—
Yeah, that makes it even harder to like separate or feel good going into that classroom after.
Yeah, and then too, he won like a Teacher of the Year award for the state of Illinois like 2 years later. I was like, of course. But for me, it really was just a moment of like, I'm very rejection sensitive. So it was just like, okay, well, now I'm never going to be good enough is kind of how I interacted with him from then on. And it was really, really hard for me, one, like you said, to interact with him as a teacher. But then two, I started to think like, oh, all of my other teammates must think this about me too. So then it was like even more isolating because whatever friendships I did have on the team, well, now it's like, well, if coach thinks this about me, then everyone else must too. Because leader, like, I feel like the opinion of leadership is so, so important. Like that really sets the tone. And so he, for me, created an environment where I was looking around at everyone like, no one here likes me. I have no friends. I'm not good enough. So why am I even here? And that's really what led to me quitting. And then it wasn't really one. Actually, there is one teacher, Mr. Swolski, Brent Swolski, Big Swole. He's going to hate that I called him Brent. leave that in. But he was the advisor for Operation Snowball throughout high school. And once I got into that program, anytime that I met with him, I always walked away feeling more confident, better about myself. And one of the more subtle ways that he really influenced my life and kind of what carries me a lot in sports too sometimes is he signs off all his emails. His signature says, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And I love that quote. And I say, like, I'm one of the luckiest people alive because I always am looking for opportunities and I'm trying to make myself a person who is able to succeed when an opportunity is given to me.
I really like that quote. I feel like I've seen it somewhere else too, but not only just the quote, but the way that you really eloquently add that to your personal experience. I think that makes it especially relatable to folks who are looking to figure out what next steps might look like, especially now, I think, and you're seeing it with your role at Harper, like what that transition looks like, how to pick a career in a landscape that's changing, and how to figure out a way to make your passions into something that is sustainable, that you can grow from, that you can find opportunities in. And, you know, a lot of the young people that we speak to are going through that transition of, okay, I'm in my junior or senior year of high school. How can I pick a field? What can I do? And, you know, are there any things that you learned either through your transition from that experience in high school to college, or, you know, since then that you feel is really beneficial to highlight and think about and reflect on?
Yeah. One of the things, you know, sort of attaching to that quote and kind of how I have interpreted the quote is don't wait for things to be handed to you. There is so much in life that you have agency of just going and getting. And so when it comes to, you know, that preparation part of the equation there, like I can control that. I can't control when opportunities are going to be given to me. So it's kind of been a thing of like staying ready. And staying ready for me looks like becoming the person that I need to be or the person that I see being successful in the roles that I want to be in. So when it comes to sports, you know, I think about becoming the best version of myself in my sport. And then that is the preparation part. And the opportunity is hoping that whoever I'm going up against hasn't prepared as hard as I have. And the opportunity when they make a mistake and I don't, that's when it looks like I'm lucky. But really, I've just prepared more.
Yeah, I feel like that preparation piece is so important. I think it's something that with our human performance projects, we also talk about a lot. And I also feel like I'm listening to a motivational speaker right now. And I'm even like, he's right, man. I got to like get in this and like take this opportunity. Like,
yes, that's the goal.
So like also in terms of just going for like bigger things and understanding like preparation and all the work that it goes into to completing really big hard tasks, I would love for you to talk about what pursued you to pursue a master's degree and kind of what that experience was like.
Yeah. So me pursuing my master's degree really was for on the speaking side of like my business, me looking at myself and saying, I'm not ready to fully launch yet. So at the time that I graduated from SIU with my bachelor's, I actually forced my best friend Jalen to start speaking with me. So me and him had like a duo, like speaking that we did together. And the reason I forced him to do it was at the time I was like, I feel comfortable in front of an audience, but I don't know that I can talk for an hour straight at that time. So I was like, okay, let me find someone who is also charismatic and has energy that one I can learn from because he is so smart and has just such great energy. And then I can also get experience being on stage myself and develop those skills for myself. So it was a great partnership while we were together. But I still was reflecting on the speeches that we were giving on the at the time. And I was just like, this still isn't up to the quality that I want this to be at. And so really what made me pursue the master's degree was my mom is a college professor as well. And she was talking about teaching. And she was like, you know, teaching is public speaking every day. And so I was like, you're right. And so my master's degree in communication studies really has a lot more to do with curriculum and instruction and teaching, as well as communication theory. So it really became an opportunity for me to practice public speaking more by becoming a teacher. And so I kind of have found a way to wrap in all of my passions and values into things that kind of feed into each other now. So when I'm teaching, I'm public speaking, that's helping me become a better speaker. I'm also teaching about public speaking. And I think teaching something is the best way to see if you actually have expertise in it. So I'm getting that experience. Then as a motivational speaker and the things that I do in the community, I'm one, gathering stories that I can bring to my classroom. So I'm then becoming a better teacher as well. A lot of my stories wrap in my journey to communication skills. And then also powerlifting is part of that story that I tell as part of my motivational speaking journey as well. So the better I get at powerlifting, it also makes my story in motivational speaking that much more impressive. So all of my things that I do kind of feed into each other. And that's been intentional. And that's something that really I saw as an opportunity to do with that master's degree is put myself in a position where I can pursue all of my passions, because being a college professor, you don't work 40 hours a week and you have a much more flexible schedule. So I can fit my gym schedule into, you know, between classes and things like that. And then if no one comes to my office hours, then, well, I guess I have time to make some TikToks in my office. And so I've been very intentional about just putting myself into positions to make my life work in a way that allows me to live the life that I want to live.
I think that the way that you're going about kind of describing how all of these pieces fit together is pretty incredible, because a lot of folks have, I mean, us, all of us included, have a lot of different interests, and often trying to figure out how to make those things work together is a really big challenge. Especially when, like you're talking about your role as a professor, but especially when we think about some of these roles traditionally, they can be a little bit rigid and not have as much flexibility, and you're figuring out ways to, you know, bring them into that realm to give you that flexibility. And I think that in itself is an entire motivational speech that would be really helpful and beneficial to professionals. But what I'm really also wanted to touch on is that's a significant challenge to try and figure out how to make all the things that work for you work all together professionally and personally. And when you're experiencing challenges in making those things work for you, how do you continue to figure out your motivations and your drives? And for you, what role does that athleticism or powerlifting play in all of that for you?
Powerlifting really became the driver of like my discipline. So really, like I say that power, like everything kind of feeds into itself, but powerlifting, I think, kind of sets the tone of my life a little bit. My day doesn't feel complete if I don't do a workout. unless my body is absolutely beat tired. Like I am like, I have to earn my rest days is like genuinely one of my gym mottos. That may not be, maybe take that off the pod. That might not be a healthy mentality, but like, you know, I think like one of the things that I think about a lot is if you are pursuing sports at the very, very highest of levels, it stops being about health. And so one of the things that I want to be clear about is like, if you are listening to this as a student who is like looking for general fitness, you're into sports for high school or things like that, that is great and wonderful. If you are an athlete who wants to take things to the absolute, absolute, absolute top level, you will have to start doing things to like for competitive advantages and things like that, where you have to balance out the pros and cons of what you're doing there. And really when it comes to like powerlifting, you know, I have so much discipline because everything that I do is fatigue managed. And so I'm able to do my workouts in a way that is convenient for my life at any given time. And so I build that flexibility into my powerlifting schedule. But I always make sure that I am getting all of my workouts done however they need to get done. Even if it means I have to go lighter to get it done faster or my body's, you know, not feeling the best, I always make sure that my workout gets done. And that really started to carry over into first my academic life, because before I went to college, when I was in high school, I actually failed calculus in high school and then got a 5 on the AP test because I just refused to do the homework for the class. And that was kind of the story of my life before I found the gym of like, yeah, I'm doing pretty well, but I just don't care to do the small things. I don't care to like do everything that's required of me. And going to the gym and seeing progress at the gym started to make me see, oh, the more effort that I put into things, the more progress I get. So let me try that in my school life. You know, let me try putting some more effort into doing my homework. Oh, wow, I'm learning more in my classes. I'm actually performing well in my classes. I didn't get a single C throughout all of my undergrad because I actually started studying for tests and doing homework. And I got into a major that I was actually interested in, and that definitely helped as well.
I love your just like comments about how powerlifting helps you to create that focus. I'm very, very big into yoga. I woke up at 6:30 this morning and I looked at my schedule for the day and I was like, I woke up and I looked at my work schedule for the day and I just thought to myself, just get up and go to class now. Like, just get it done. And I really do think that that like discipline and that practice, I think of yoga, like uniquely for me, it really helps me to one, like kind of cancel everything out for the day. But I actually like had this experience in class the other night. I do yoga sculpts, which is a little bit of like Pilates and weights mixed with like yoga moves and cardio. And I like was speaking really nicely to myself during class.
Yes.
And I was just like, you're strong. Like, you can keep going. Or I remember like at one point I was like, don't give up. Like, you can do this. You know, you don't have to do it much longer. And after class, I was just really reflecting on what are the ways that I can incorporate that into like my work, into my lifestyle a little bit more in the moments that feel challenging or like I'm lacking motivation. So I think that that is one of like the beautiful things that like sports can do for you and just like movement can do for your body. So I just like,
And you know, the other thing too, like, you know, sort of touching in that is like, talking nicely to yourself is such a powerful part of sports. But then also like doing sports, you start to do things that like you didn't know you were capable of. And that really also became like one of the driving factors for me and like how powerlifting like kind of changed me is when I was in high school, when I, you know, was told that I was too weak to be on my high school football team. I was 5'2", 130 pounds. So he maybe had a point. He could have put it more gently, but you know, I was not a very strong person at the time. But if I had told that person that in 10, 12, 13 years, they would be the third strongest person at Midwest Regionals in bench press specifically, the thing that your coach told you you were too weak at, they would have lost their mind. But that power of sport of just, okay, I'm going to improve myself a little bit. I'm going to improve myself a little bit. And that really became the other part of what sports did for me is I started realizing that I am so much more capable than I think I am. Like, I didn't start being able to deadlift almost 700 pounds. You know, when I first started, I think my max was like 95 for a deadlift. But once I started working at it and started building myself up, I became stronger. I became a person who could deadlift more weight, until the point that I deadlifted 672 pounds. And that is my current PR. Hopefully we'll break that soon. But I almost deadlifted 700. And the only reason I didn't hit that deadlift that day is because I beat myself. I was at a meet and everyone in the audience was telling me like, load up 700, deadlift 700, deadlift 700. And everyone else thought I could do it. Everyone else was telling me like, you got this, you can do it. And in my head, before I even walked up to the bar, I was like, I don't have this today. I'm not strong enough today. But I did tell myself like, look, you're not going to walk up to this bar and not have it come off the ground at all. So just pull hard. And then, you know, once it comes off the ground, you know, you'll be done, you'll be good, you know, showmanship, whatever. And I grabbed the bar and I like pulled on it as hard as I could. And I got it like to my knees. And I was like, oh my God, like, it's like, if I was mentally prepared to grind this out today or grind this out right now, I could have deadlifted 700 pounds that day. And it was entirely me just in my head, not telling myself, just believe in yourself, just try. And that is really like the biggest thing. You know, a quote that I heard recently, or a study I think recently came out of like, the most successful people aren't the ones with the best plans. They're the ones who get started. And then, you know, if your plan doesn't work, then you figure something else out and you try again. But the people who are successful are the ones who just take that first step. Don't get caught up in your head thinking about the plan or it needing to be perfect. Just try your best and give it your all on any given day. And that effort that you put into starting or trying is already better than most people.
I just like, yeah, I love all of that. And it made me think of a quote I had heard a college professor say, which was something along the lines of, life is what happens in between like the moments you thought you planned for.
I feel like, right?
It's really always stuck with me. But I think just knowing how to like take that first step and knowing that things don't always go to plan, but being able to like take that next step and just like figure it out as you go, I think like it's so important. It's quite literally just like kind of life. In touching a little bit more on your powerlifting and what it really took to watch yourself grow in that in terms of what you could lift, what role does chemical health play in your ability to be a powerlifter and to continue to improve your mobility, your flexibility, and your strength?
So first off, your diet is so much more of the sport, any sport that you're doing, any part of your life, really, than you think it is. Powerlifting being a weight class sport is really like the first time I started to pay attention to my diet, just having to be like, oh, you know, I started off in a weight class where I was, I think, 182 pounds. So I was still on like the lighter side, and I didn't have to do any sort of weight manipulation for my first meet. In terms of hydration or dieting or anything like that. But really at the end of the day, food is chemicals. And that chemical, that energy, those vitamins and minerals play such a huge factor in how your body is going to feel on a certain day, what your body is going to look like, feel like, perform like. And so the first thing that I had to really get right in my fitness journey was like the idea that fitness is 20% what you do in the gym, 80% what you do in the kitchen. Like it is such a huge part of your life to have the right macronutrients in your diet, micronutrients, the right vitamins and things like that. But then just thinking about what would it take for you to put 600 pounds on your back, sit down and stand up with it. Like that harms your brain in ways that, you know, your central nervous system gets absolutely fried and flooded with adrenaline. So if you don't have like your brain chemicals, if you're not in tune with how your body is feeling, it is so, so easy to either A, just not be able to perform as well as you want is the best case scenario. But B, there are cases where people can get injured or even pass out from, you know, not being hydrated enough and things like that, or being overstimulated is a really, really big one of people just being so overcaffeinated and things like that. And so it really has been a huge deal to just get my diet in check and then also making sure that I am paying attention to the other supplements that I'm putting into my body as well.
I think that's a really great way to introduce the concept altogether, really taking into account all these different factors and thinking really critically about every single aspect of what goes into being able to perform, right? That's what you're eating, what you're doing, how you're thinking. And when we share this information with athletes and with students, we also really emphasize that anything you're putting into your body is part of your diet. Anything you're eating is part of your diet.
I tried to eat a slice of pizza before. Well, no, I tried. I ate a slice of pizza before I had a soccer game a few weeks ago. I couldn't run. And it was like so humbling because I usually am so good before a game. But this one that I was like, my friends were getting pizza, and I was like, I'll have one slice before I go play. I could not run like I normally can. So it's just like, it's crazy how much it impacts your ability to literally move your body.
And that's like food. Like that's, you know, something that is at the end of the day, like fuel. So thinking about putting something that could have a similar effect like that into your body, that's not even like technically food, or, you know, you don't really know what goes into all of these supplements and things like that. Yeah, it's that like chemical part of things is really, really important. And even like down for me, like mental health, even if I'm just not in a good mindset when I go into the gym, like that affects my performance. So there's so much that goes into like how you are going to perform on the day of your performance in your training every day matters. Like people, I think athletes, I think don't always pay attention to like the preparation that you put into practice. You know, that is equally important as like how you sleep on the night before a game day, because if you're going into all of your, you know, training sessions, even just sleep deprived, right? Like your training just isn't as good.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also, you know, to add to that, you were talking a lot previously about preparation, mental health, all these different components. And a lot of, or some of the questions that we get around parts of diet include things like pre-workout or caffeine or other substances. We'll frequently talk about, you know, pain relievers before, during, and after an injury or those kinds of things. So what are your experiences with some of those substances? I mean, you were touching on it saying that you don't really know what's in some of these supplements, and it's something we tell students, but what's your sort of experience with those things?
Yeah, so I honestly think I got very lucky with getting into fitness at a later age, because I missed out on the like phase of pre-workouts that were literally killing people. When like pre-workouts first got popular, there were pre-workouts that were so strong that like they were causing people to have heart palpitations, things like that in the middle of their workouts. And literally, like, people died from some of those earlier pre-workouts. And so it really, really, like, highlights how important it is to be paying attention to what you're putting into your body, because it's so easy to have a bad experience with it. And at the end of the day, you should not need pre-workout to perform. It should be additive. It doesn't do as much as you think it does, but I think athletes get caught up in, like, oh, I feel good when I'm on it, so, you know, that's what makes me perform better. There's other ways to make yourself feel good and feel ready to perform that also might, you know, one, at, you know, could lead to death and harm and things like that. But two, like, if your mind is racing too fast too, then you're also going to have performance issues, because now you're going to start making more mistakes. So it's sort of a double-edged sword anyway. And it's so easy to get caught up in, you know, bad brands or overdoing it and things like that, that you just have to be careful with it if you are going to take pre-workout at all. And I'm saying this as someone who, like, I do take pre-workout. I am someone who I enjoy, like, having pre-workout when I am working out. I do think, you know, there are legitimate workout benefits to it, but I don't take it every day. And it is legitimately the only caffeine that I ingest probably 90% of the days. Every once in a while, I have myself a little Dr. Pepper, but literally, I don't drink coffee. I don't drink other energy drinks. Literally, like, it is pre-workout. And then on the days that I'm not working out, I have zero caffeine.
Yeah, I remember when I was kind of later in high school, I think is when pre-workout started to become a big thing. And I remember even, like, I bought myself some when I was in, like, college, and I was a college athlete and getting a minor in dance. So I was very, yeah, very active. I know this is the first time that you and I have ever met, Izzy. I don't need caffeine. Leah, yeah, knows that I am plenty energetic enough, and I don't very often drink caffeine at all either. So I just remember one day being like, I don't need this pre-workout, and I feel so much more anxious when, yeah, I do take it, because I don't need it. And now I'm feeling, like, really jittery. My hands are shaking. I feel really anxious at the gym. So kind of along those lines, when it does come to any, like, youth athletes who are listening, or maybe coaches of people who coach youth athletes, what are things that you would just want them to know and really think about when it comes to things like pre-workout supplements and any of those other substances that are promoted as, like, workout enhancing?
Yeah. So the first thing I'm going to say is consider whether your athlete needs it at all. Some athletes, like, I had ADHD throughout high school. If you had given me pre-workout on top of me having ADHD, like, I'm actually, as a child, I literally did this in a basketball game. I was literally, like, running around the court, like, yeah, like, I would have been doing that as a high schooler if you gave me pre-workout. So, like, you know, some of your athletes just straight up don't need it. But if you are going to have, you know, if you're going to take pre-workout, or if you're going to suggest it, I have three things and three stories to go along with it. One, make sure that the brand that you are using is a trusted brand. There is a power lifter named Ray Williams who got literally suspended for 3 years last year in powerlifting. And he is, like, one of the nicest people I've ever met. He is a grizzly bear of a man. He is one of the strongest super heavyweights of all time. Like, he was a world record holder for literally the heaviest weights lifted of all time, raw and drug tested, for a long, long time. And he got a 3-year suspension for just taking the wrong pre-workout. He is sponsored by a pre-workout brand, and something I think happened where his luggage got lost at the airport, and on the day of the meet, he was just like, oh, I need some pre-workout, you know, let me borrow some from someone else. And that pre-workout happened to have some sort of banned substance in it. And now, because he took that pre-workout and then competed and did well, he got drug tested, and now he's out of the sport for 3 years. over, you know, what is really a small mistake. And he is not an athlete that anyone had any concerns about anything like that happening to. And it literally was just, he took the wrong pre-workout that day. So it's not hard to have these pre-workouts that have banned or harmful substances in them, because most of them aren't checked by the FDA. So you really have to be careful what brands you're using. Follow the dosing. If it says to only take one scoop at a max, only take one scoop at a max. There was one time when I was going to the gym, and I'm sure other people fall into this trap too, of like, you're looking at the bottom of the pre-workout thing and you're like, oh, there's only about one scoop in there left. And I just dumped it all in, and it had to have been like three scoops of pre-workout. It was bad. And as I was at the gym, like, I literally started hallucinating. Like, I was out of my mind for a little bit at the gym. I remember, like, after a set, I looked at my friend and I was like, Jake, where am I? And after that, I was like, I am only ever, like, I, like, really, really cut back on my pre-workout intake after that, because I was like, that's scary that I literally, like, was out of my mind because it was just, like, so, so stimulated. So it is really, really easy to, you know, have that overdose happen. And then the last thing, I touched on this earlier, but find balance. I don't drink, you know, other forms of caffeine or things like that. But, you know, drinking pre-workout and a coffee in the morning is already like 500 milligrams of caffeine. Like, that's already half a gram a day of caffeine. That's not good for you to do on a daily basis. So if you are going to take pre-workout, you know, maybe that's the only caffeine you drink for that day. Don't take it too close to when you're going to bed either. It says like 6 hours before you intend to go to bed. And then take breaks from it every once in a while in terms of that balance. Like, if you are going through, like, if you're starting your like off season from your sport, and your workouts are going to be easy for a little bit, that's the perfect time to take a little break from the pre-workout, because, you know, you don't necessarily need quite as much energy to get through.
Yeah, I think being very mindful about what you're taking, when you're taking it, is so important to your like nutrition and your health when it comes to trying to continue to do a sport, get even better at a sport. And I really love that you touch on being really mindful during your off season. Kind of along similar lines, I'm like, and again, already shared, like, have been an athlete my whole life, still play soccer, and I'm very active. I'm wondering if you have any just like stories about injuries, big or small, and the importance of your health when it comes to like your chemical health, like if you're prescribed an opioid or an extra strength Tylenol, mm-hmm. the things that you're eating, the amount of water you're drinking and sleeping, like what is injury prevention and rehabilitation look like for you? Or like, what would you want people to know about that aspect of being an athlete?
So one, the best medicine that you can possibly give your body is movement. Your body, when it's moving and getting warm and things like that, the blood flow increases, and that blood flow is carrying nutrients that will help heal your injury. So when people get injured and they like completely stop moving altogether, like, oh, you know, I injured my foot, so I'm not going to walk at all anymore. That's like the worst thing that you can do for it, because you are like stopping blood flow from getting into that muscle and forcing it to lock up. So to whatever degree is comfortable for you, I tell people to try to continue to move. If you are able to still do movement of any sort, if it's just like, oh, you know, I have a muscle strain or something like that, a lot of times what's best for it is doing movements with really, really light weights to get some blood flow into it, making sure that it's still moving, still able to move. And then when it comes to like things like taking, you know, painkillers or things like that, use them sparingly. My mom is a nurse, so I've grown up like, you know, hearing about the stories of how easy it is to get, you know, addicted to painkillers and things like that. So there's that aspect to it. But there's also the aspect of like, if you're taking like 12 Tylenols a day, that's just bad for your kidneys and your other organs as well. So it kind of is also doing double damage, actually triple damage, really, because the last thing like to consider about pain is that pain is a signal to your body saying that something is wrong. And if you're numbing that signal to say that something is wrong, then you're furthering your risk of injury, because maybe now you're pushing your body past the point that it's telling you to stop. And now you just overextended an elbow or something like that. And so, like, I understand we don't want to be in pain, but understanding what pain's role is in the body is really important, I think.
I really appreciate you sort of sharing all the considerations, right? Because there are so many things to take into account when you are playing a sport. And I know Erica talks about like great ways to figure out how to re-energize yourself after an injury. And she's also shared some information about like the mindset and the mentality that you have to figure out how to get into and navigate when you're experiencing something that can be that isolating. So I think it's good that you kind of share a lot of things. And over the course of this episode, because we're coming down towards the end here now, you've shared a lot of information about a lot of different topics and done a really good job of bringing them together. And we are very excited that you're also going to collaborate with us next week for our student leadership workshop.
Yes. I am so excited for that. Thank you for letting me be here to info dump. I love just yapping, so this has been great for me.
Whenever we record a podcast, I like, there's just like really good flow and conversation. We say like we're professional yappers and we discuss like professionally gab for like the hour.
I literally have a shirt that says professional yapper. No, that wasn't the shirt I was wearing when I met Leah. I think I was wearing the Silly Goose University one that day. But I do have one that says professional yapper. And when people joke about it, I'm like, no, I literally am. Like, people will like joke and they'll be like, oh, you're a professional yapper, but you're leaving this conversation. I'm like, are you paying me?
Well, we are. So we're very, very thrilled to have you professionally yapping for us next week. We talked about a lot, but is there anything else you want to share? Because we're going to share this with our audience to encourage folks to come out and to see you and to participate. And so is there anything that you're super excited for next week that you'd love to talk a little bit about? Yeah.
So I love talking to you all. You all are lovely, wonderful people, but I just love connecting with students. I think the energy that students bring is so just like pure. And I think, you know, when you are connecting with them, when you are able to like get them to that point of trusting you, they truly believe that they can do anything. And it's just so cool to help someone like from that perspective. So I'm so, so excited for that opportunity to connect with them. For one reason or another, since I've started Izzy Speaks Up as an LLC, I found some reason to make it sort of a side income. So this workshop next week is my official launch of me being fully, fully invested, fully pursuing this as a full-time speaker. So this will be my main source of income. So that puts a little bit of extra pressure on me. But like I said, I love a challenge. I love getting to, like, I think of public speaking kind of as a puzzle. So it'll be fun for me to put together the pieces that will really, really connect with them and stand out to students. So I'm just excited for the opportunity to get my message out there and continue to grow and help other students hear a message. Really, my message is rooted in, what did I need to hear when I was their age? And being able to try to share that with that next generation.
I love that. And I relate just like so much and how my own experiences really shape the work that I do. Before we wrap up, I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing what has it done for your mental health to be able to have these conversations with students that you wish someone would have had with you when you needed to hear it at your younger ages?
It is honestly like the most inspiring thing. It really is what gives me motivation to like keep doing what I'm doing when things do get hard, when I am struggling, when I'm putting myself into uncomfortable positions, just reminding myself like who and what am I doing this for? And what I'm doing this for is to leave an impression on students. Really, my whole core is leave people a little bit better than how you found them. And that is all that I really carry with me throughout the day, is if I can have an impact, even a small one, on one person, then I've done my job.
I love that. Our former team lead used to say, it doesn't matter if it's one or 100, as long as you're able to make that impact on even just one person, it makes it worth it. So I love that you just like truly emulate that and are getting the opportunity to do that full time. I have loved talking to you. I feel like I could listen to you talk forever.
We're besties now.
I mean, yeah, now we are. As we kind of wrap up, I would love to just ask you like a few fun questions. Be able to get to know you a little bit more. So what is a good book or a TV show or something that is just making you laugh and happy right now?
So a little fun fact about me, I actually grew up in a Japanese dual language program from kindergarten through eighth grade.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I actually have always loved anime. And so the one that's big right now is One Piece. It's the longest running anime of all time right now. But I swear, everyone, it is going to be, honestly, I'm going to make this my hot take on the podcast. When One Piece ends, it will end as the greatest piece of cinematic history, in cinematic history. I promise that is my hot take and I will stand on it.
I do honestly also love a good anime. So I do like kind of believe you. I'm like, if this has been going this long, they're not going to like Game of Thrones it. They're going to get it right in the end.
My biggest thing is with this show is it's long, but you're already hooked by like the part where you'd be like, oh, a normal anime should end here. And you're like, man, I wish there was more of this anime. Well, with One Piece, there is.
I love that.
I cried within the first 100 episodes of One Piece. So even if you're complaining about it being 1,000 episodes, within the first 100, you will get emotionally invested.
I have to give that one like a shot on my next, like I need something to put on night. Okay, my next question for you is, you know, when you're not really focused on your training or your nutrition in terms of your training, what is one of your favorite foods to eat?
Even when I am training, I still eat this. Pizza is my go-to. I'm like very basic with it though. I love a good just cheese pizza, like nice and simple.
Are we doing thin crust or thick crust or like Chicago deep dish?
Same question.
See, all pizzas matter. I like all, like they each hit a different like niche for me. Cause so I'm very, I'm not the best example to follow when it comes to diet. I'm in progress on the diet part. So genuinely for about the first 8 years of my fitness career, I ate pizza almost every day. And I just found a way to make it work within my macros. But yeah, I would just eat pizza as part of, you know, my diet every day. And so I would alternate to like give myself variety. I would alternate between brands, thickness of crust, you know. So I like them all. My favorite, probably a nice pan pizza. But, you know, I would probably say deep dish if I had deep dish more often, but deep dish is like a specialty for me. Like people, like I don't get deep dish very often for me to be like, oh yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I feel you. Deep dish is like, I feel like after I have two slices, maybe a third, I'm like so full. And it's like that, like, I feel like even though like, you know, we live in Chicago or outside of it, it's like the Chicago classic, but I also like don't get deep dish too often because I'm like, I feel like I need to save that for special things.
That's exactly what it is.
And I'm not going to comment because that'll be the next hot take for the episode.
Okay, Miss New York, we get it.
I'm a New Yorker, I'm a New Yorker, so it has to be like a thin crust, like a pizza I can fold in half.
See, my one issue with like the thin crust is that like there's just not enough pizza. Like I just want more.
I'm not.
If I put two on top of each other to make one slice of pizza, then that's doing too much.
You don't have to put them on top of each other. You could just have a whole pie. You know, it's at your discretion. But
Yeah, you're right. Any pizza is a personal pizza if you try hard enough.
True. Okay, so last kind of like fun question. What is a place that is really special to you? It could be somewhere that you visited like one time, somewhere you go often, but what is just like a favorite place that you have or somewhere that is special to you?
This is going to be a cheesy answer. I'm going to put a plug out for the leadership camp that I volunteered at for a long time called the Sabrin Goodman Teen Institute, CGTI. Every summer when I was there, from when I was a participant to a staff member to being on leadership team, it always felt like coming home and meeting, you know, hanging out with my family again for a whole week. So I haven't actually gotten to like volunteer there in 2 years. So it just... is a place I'm missing right now.
I had the opportunity to speak at CGTI, I think 2 summers ago, maybe it was 3 summers ago now. And the energy there definitely was just like very, it was just such high energy. And you could tell that there were so many youth and volunteers and adults there who just like want to make the world a better place and who like want to be involved with their community. So I agree. CGTI was a great experience. Eastern Illinois could, you know, if I could ask for one thing, it'd be air conditioning.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, still
warm
really
and great. No shade at the cooking staff, but, you know, catering maybe for CGTI, if we can get some funding.
I agree. Because yeah. food matters. I'm also, Leah and I, we love food. I love food and love to eat. Well, Izzy, I would just love to give you one last opportunity. Is there anything else you want to say or just leave our listeners with before we wrap up?
Oh, I should plug my, I'm so bad about doing my own social media plugs. Follow me on Instagram at Izzy Speaks Up, I-Z-Z-Y, the word speaks, and then up, U-P. Or if you want more information, if you want me at one of your events, you can visit my website, Izzy Speaks Up, spelled the same, .com. I do technically have the .org too, but IzzySpeaksUp.com.
Well, Izzy, thank you so much for your time today, for today and all the time and energy you're going to give us next Tuesday. I am sad I can't be at the Student Leadership Workshop, but I cannot wait to hear all about it and how it goes.
I'm so excited for it. And to everyone who will be there, I'm so excited to see you and meet you and connect with you. Come talk to me. Come say hi afterwards. I love getting to meet people one-on-one.